We are living in an American culture that has shifted from tolerant to cancel culture, from supportive to disruptive, from decent to rude, from optimistic to cynical, and from relatively safe to increasingly violent. Many are willing to exchange their liberty for a form of socialism. Through this podcast, we will chart a course to get America back on track.
Hi, I am Allie Farah, daughter of Barry Farah. My dad's a best-selling author, CEO across six industries, and former candidate for governor of Colorado. He is also a private pilot, adventurer, and engaging life coach. I should know. Through Culture Shift, my dad will systematically deliver a fresh and compelling path that will help you create your own American dream.
Hello, I hope you're doing great today. Today we're going to talk about the freedom to speak. Now last week we had looked at the freedom to believe. It's embodied in the Constitution as freedom of religion. We find support for this freedom from the very beginning of time. We talked about God being the author of freedom. It came right from his heart. He's a giver, and he wants you to own this free and clear title to the joy that comes from living well. He won't coerce you to do what's best for you, but he invites you. And when people respond to God, it sets them free. In the Bible, King David came to this conclusion in Psalm 119. He said, "I walk in freedom if I seek God's ways." All the prophetic descriptions throughout Scripture, culminating really with Isaiah that related to the Messiah coming, talked about the Messiah coming to bring freedom. It's explicitly stated in Isaiah 61. Knowing this Messiah sets you free, according to John 8. And according to Galatians 5, it was for freedom that Christ set us free. The whole purpose of the Christian faith is for freedom. Social scientists define freedom in society. Assuming you're not using your freedom to impose restrictions on other people's freedom, it's when there's no coercion. It's when there's no restriction. It's when there is no censorship. When there's freedom, you're not forced into one lane of thought. You can promote your beliefs. Though not everyone who developed America's founding documents identified themselves as Christians, most did, and they were all influenced by Judeo-Christian thought. You read through the book of Exodus, Leviticus, and Deuteronomy, you couple that with the passages in the New Testament, and you find American laws come from Judeo-Christian ideas. There should be no cruel, unusual punishment. The punishment should fit the crime. Private property is a right. Due process requires witnesses and a step-by-step approach to reach truth. In this process, you're free to speak and to defend yourself, to confront your accuser, to speak your mind. All that can be found in the Scriptures. Prior to the founding of America, gaining steam during the Reformation, ideas were swirling on how government could protect freedom. Freedom rights became famously categorized in the Declaration of Independence: life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. In fact, what made America special is that freedom was established as a political right. When you become an American citizen by birth or legal immigration, you receive the right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. No other superpower was founded on freedom rights. All the others were established with conquest and a territory in mind. 2 years after America's Constitution is ratified, 10 amendments were added. These are called the Bill of Rights. They were an attempt to amplify and clarify the three freedom rights. In the First Amendment, altogether six rights are established. The first and the second are the right to establish and practice religion, and we discussed those last week. The third and fourth are freedom of speech and freedom of the press. Today, we're looking at those. Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof or abridging the freedom of speech or of the press. But the cancel culture has pulled out all the stops to attempt to shut people up. College campuses, even corporations, team sports, social media. This freedom to speak your mind is a corollary to the pursuit of happiness. And here's what a corollary is. It's a natural consequence or result of an argument or a case. So the right to pursue happiness became known the world over as the American dream. It's the argument for the right to pursue your own vocation without government interference. So when you're free to pursue happiness, you have a right to your own labor. Now, John Locke really described this in the late 1600s, where he described the differentiation between what had happened for so many years, where the king kind of had the right to your labor, and an individual having a right to his own labor, able to choose a different vocation than his dad, which was kind of a revolutionary thought in the late 1600s. So the right to your own labor. Then the freedom to think, and that's the freedom to express yourself. It's part of you. It's who you are. So for you to be able to think, that is part of expression. But the other part of expression, the freedom to express yourself, is the freedom to promote. This is a different level, like a pastor or a businessman or a politician can promote an idea, attempt to persuade people on that idea. Hopefully the best ideas win. The other concept connected to freedom to express yourself is the freedom to challenge. It's like an artist could put together some kind of art to communicate some wrong. A journalist could do honest journalism to expose some wrong. A citizen could go about exposing wrong him or herself. So the freedom to speak is the right to speak from your mind, your will, your emotions, your soul. It's an acknowledgement that you as an American have validity. It's up to you to prove that you're credible. But as an American right, you are valid. You're a person and you have the right by birth, to be able to speak your mind, and the press has a right to do its part as well. So freedom of speech and the freedom of the press is a really thoroughly biblical concept. Here's some ideas from Scripture that support this infrastructure. We discussed how God the Father is the author of freedom last week. Just as God's the author of freedom, he's the author of speech. In fact, we're introduced to God in the Bible, first by what he speaks, and then the awesome result of the power of what he speaks. And you don't have to go any further than Genesis 1 to find out what this is like. God spoke, and it was. If you take the one day to God as like 1,000 years to us concept that's communicated in Peter, and that's certainly true and certainly acceptable from the perspective of astrophysics. In fact, out in space, from any particular point in time, you could come up with almost any length for one day from the perspective of some other planet. For example, one Venus day right now is 243 Earth days. Light travels millions of light years to reach us. I mean, the sun is 93 million miles away, but it takes 8 minutes for that light to get here. You add that up when you get way out into the universe, way out there, and this is not a young Earth. Radiometric dating shows rocks to be billions of years old. So each creation day must take the interpretation of that word day, yom, as a period. Just as the yom of the Lord is much longer than a 24-hour period, and we're currently in the seventh yom, or the seventh day, the period that God's resting from creation. So if you can hang with that interpretation, then all the science we know properly fits within the creation day big picture description of processes and events that are outlined in Genesis. The creation accounts in Genesis are accurate, and they're scientifically sound, and they're in the right spot. For more on this, check out reasons.org. I'm just zooming in on the power of the spoken word and starting with God's spoken word. God's spoken word has special power, more than any power that we have, and that's ex nihilo creative power. He can create something pretty magnificent from absolutely nothing. For all creation events, he spoke and it was. Then God said, "Let there be light." And it was so. Astrophysicists will tell you they can prove that the universe has a beginning. It's about 14.5 billion years ago. The only thing that makes sense logically is that God created it. And so creation day one is where he created the universe as a whole and the earth as a whole. Now, it wasn't ready for human life yet. That started about 14.5 billion years ago, and it ended about 4 billion years ago. So that's day one. But it all comes from God speaking. Then God said, "Let the waters," and he describes what's going to happen with that, and it was so. The waters above are the waters in the sky, and they're separated from the waters below, and that's the earth. This is the creation of the atmosphere and the water cycle, and this lasts about 500 million years. Astronomers model planetary formation, and they say this is consistent with the atmosphere creation events of day two. By the way, the Earth is a special planet. It's inhabitable for life. other planets aren't so lucky, like it's really windy on Mars. Then God said, let the earth sprout. And all the stuff sprouted, and it was so. This creation period takes you through dry land, and a bunch of the plant life gets started. Science shows a sudden burst of creation here, and it's not very easy to explain without an all-powerful God. Then God said, let there be, and all the things that come after that verse. I'm not going through each of those verses. You can read those for yourself. They're in Genesis 1. I'm just communicating that God spoke and it was. And it was so. This is the seasons of fall, winter, spring, and summer. They're all set in motion. So from the perspective of Earth, the atmosphere that was created in day 2 can now be seen in day 4. All these more advanced forms of plants and trees can now develop. This day goes for about 600 million years ago, starting about 600 million years ago. That's day 4. Up to day 5. Then God said, let the waters teem. And all the sea monsters and everything, and the birds of the air and all those guys get created. The waters swarmed after their kind, and after every winged bird after its kind. So it happened the way God said. Whole bunch of fish and birds are created. Now, this is an interesting thing. Scientists don't really have an explanation for two primary things on the evolutionary theory. One is, how did we have enough time for it to get started? And when you only go back 14.5 billion years, we just don't have a time, enough time to create something from nothing that can be so complex and so extraordinary. So it makes a lot more sense for that to be God. The other big problem of the evolutionary theory is that they have a difficult time with transitional fossils in this day 5. This is the fossils between species. And this is what they call the explosive growth of the Cambrian Age. God created each species in a unique act of creation. God commands them to multiply, and that explains what happened. And what scientists call this very difficult to explain explosive Cambrian Age. Anyway, that's day 5. Now we're up to day 6. Then God said, let the earth bring forth all the things that God said for it to bring forth. And then, after all those animals, let us make man in our image. All that's in day 6. There's a lot going on in day 6. And it was so. So this day starts at about 250 million years ago. Land animals are created. Now those sea dinosaurs, like the plesiosaur, they were created in day 5. All the land dinosaurs are created here in day 6. They die off after further preparing Earth for sophisticated life. Then these human-like creations, like the Neanderthal and the Australopithecus, I didn't say that right, but that's okay. Let me try that one more time. I think it's called the Australopithecus. Anyway, those guys are the cavemen. And those cavemen were created to further prepare Earth for humans. They die off, and near the end of day 6 is the crowning creation, male and female, in his image, according to our likeness, and let them rule in the image of God, male and female. He created them. That's why you possess an eternal soul. That's why you're conscious of your own existence. And that's why you can train a dolphin versus the other way around. I mean, animals are cool, but they can't train you. And you can choose to live by an intentional moral code. It's also why you can create things. Now, I'm not talking about the ex nihilo creation that God has from nothing, but you can create from what God's already created. You can add value. You can build buildings. You can design gorgeous resorts. You can prepare a beautiful 7-course meal. You can invent comfortable clothing. The sky's the limit. It's also why, since you're created in his image, you can volitionally worship God. This power of the spoken word is unique to humans. Animals can communicate. In fact, if my uncle was a whale specialist out in Cape Cod. There's even a little sign up in one of those museums over there that kind of honors him. But anyway, he kind of figured out how whales talk way back in the olden days, way back in the 70s. He had these big, huge tapes of whale conversation. And so we learned that if you go underwater a little bit near the whales, just you can be, just close to shore and go underwater about 5 or 6 feet, and you can hear the whales talking. Next time you're at the ocean when there's whale activity around, just go underwater about 4 or 5 feet, equalize your ears, and listen. So they can talk, and they have communication. But it's not the same kind of communication as humans. No animal can command obedience from a human. But humans can command obedience from animals, and they get trained. There's even some whales that'll get trained. So speaking has power. And give you an example going way back to Genesis 2. Adam spoke, and that was its name. It's really an interesting scripture in Genesis 2:19. God created all the animals and brought them to the man to see what he would call them. And whatever the man called every living creature, that was its name. God was so interested in giving them him autonomy and giving him that power to communicate that when Adam named him, that was the name. And so that's the power of words. But words can also destroy. Proverbs 18:21 says that death and life are in the power of the tongue. It can also help you live well, live healthy. In 1 Peter 3, whoever desires to love life and see good days, let him keep his tongue from evil and his lips from speaking deceit. You can honor God and you can curse people. James 3, with the tongue we bless our Father, and with it we curse people who have been made in the likeness of God. That's bad. So our tongue is really powerful. It can do really good things and it can hurt. If you're encouraging your brother or your sister or your mom or your dad or your girlfriend or your boyfriend or your wife or your husband, and you give them words of encouragement, are any of them mad at you for that? No, because words of encouragement have power. And those are much better than words of discouragement. But unfortunately, words of discouragement have power as well. So the idea of speech and the freedom of speech is that the best ideas can win. So when you look at Proverbs 18:17, you'll find that the one who states his case first seems right. And that's until the other guy comes along and examines him. And so with freedom of speech, truth can be uncovered. Freedom of speech is necessary for keeping government in check. Free speech enables government to be chosen by the people. The Bible supports a government chosen by the people. It's kind of interesting. Since we're created in his image, one person should not impose rulership over another person, not without their consent. And since all people have the image of God in them, not just a few people should rule over the others, as in the divine right of kings era. That's a bad time in history where one person thought that he was truly superior to another. But if you look at the Old Testament narratives, they suggest that government works best and is really designed best with the consent of the governed. God warned against too much power in the hands of too few. You can see this in 1 Samuel 8, where he warns against having a monarch. This will be the procedure of the king who will reign over you. He will take your sons and make them do stuff for him. He'll take your daughters and make them do things for him. And some of those things aren't so nice. He'll take the best of your fields. He'll take a tenth of your seed. He'll tax you. He'll tell you what to do with your employees. He'll take a tenth of your flocks. And you yourselves will become his servants. The idea of a ruler is not to rule over you, but to serve for the benefit of the people. That's what Romans 13:4 says. And God ultimately shows this when Christ comes as a servant. So a politician is supposed to be a servant for good. Freedom of speech helps expose a government cover-up. Ordinary citizens can broadcast the mistake and initiate a movement that puts a stay on it. King David, from 1,000 years before Christ, abused his power. He took a loyal soldier's wife. He had a choice to make: come clean or try yet again to cover things up. Unfortunately, he ended up killing his loyal soldier, and that was the husband of the woman he stole. And then he further tried to cover things up by marrying her before she had the baby, who was Solomon. His power had corrupted him. The only representation of opposition left was the courageous prophet Nathan. Now, Nathan spoke truth to David. As a court prophet, he was a simile of the honest journalist at the time. We don't have a whole lot of honest journalists right now, but when an honest journalist is around, that's what the court prophet would do. And out of 2 Samuel 12, you'll find what happens at the end of this is that David basically says, hey, look, tell me what's true. Go ahead, Nathan. Nathan gives him this story and then says to David, you are the man. You are the one that's guilty. Journalistic freedom with responsible journalists who use their journalism to be courageous and be champions of truth is good. And even when it hurts their candidate, Nathan's candidate was King David. But the freedom of the press is vital, and it's really gone woefully off track by just completely ignoring their favorite candidate and at the harm and at the angst of the candidate they don't like. It's critical for a democratic republic to have a free media. A free media can function as a watchdog. It can investigate and report on government wrongdoing, as it should. Without these freedoms to speak, all other freedoms are at risk. Freedom of speech and the press is necessary to protect the idea of a government of the people, by the people. Otherwise, rulers would just suppress any criticism of their mistakes or bad actions. Without freedom of speech, the legit opponents would be prohibited from making a case to replace them. Without it, a dishonest press does not have a counterweight. Competition helps build a balance. But we are now witnessing widespread censorship, and this is dangerous. We don't want to go down this road. That's what Iran and Afghanistan and North Korea and China do. They censor speech. It results in a culture of fear. Freedom of speech is enshrined in the First Amendment, and it grants all Americans, just by right, the liberty to criticize the government. And it gives all Americans the authority to speak their minds without fear of being persecuted. We should return to broad support of freedom of speech. Protecting people's ability to think and decide for themselves is essential. Protecting people's ability to freely make up their own mind is foundational to a free people. Censorship prevents broad access to arguments on all sides of the issue. This can only happen if society permits all the different viewpoints on an issue to be freely expressed. There's this whole controversy at the time of this broadcast related to elections. It seems like there's a lot of election irregularities. Now, if the mainstream media pursued that as diligently as they would if it wasn't their candidate on the line, they would have a lot of credibility. And if their candidate still won, then I think everyone would accept that. But by stifling free speech, by stifling what others are saying, by censoring things, you denigrate the culture at large. Freedom of speech is extremely important, as all other freedoms are, but without the freedom of speech, no other freedoms have a chance. You know, the freedom of speech concept is really the way of God. I'm going to point you to something at the very end of the Bible in Revelation. The Spirit and the bride say, come. And let the one who hears say, come. And let the one who is thirsty come. Let the one who wishes take the water of life without cost. Now that's three verses from the very end of the Bible. And the Bible is thick. I mean, there's 783,000 words in the Bible. And three verses from the very end of it, you have freedom. It's your choice. You are invited. And so culture, unfortunately, has shifted away from the good that comes from the biblical framework that led to America as a nation. But you can help shift it back for good. Thanks for joining with us this week. I'm all about your success, and that depends on you being free to speak. I'm hoping you will think for yourself and speak your mind.
Hi, I'm David Farah. Thank you for listening to my dad's podcast, The Barry Farah Show, Culture Shift. Click subscribe now to be sure you don't miss an episode. Share this podcast with your friends on social media and give The Barry Farah Show your 5-star rating. Check out today's show notes below this episode and at thebarryfarahshow.com. This podcast is also available in video format at The Barry Farah Show on YouTube. See you next time.